Springfield's Talk 104.1. I'm Nick Reed, and it's time for Author of the Week, sponsored by ABC Books on North Glenstone. We have this morning Scott McKay. The book is Racism, Revenge, and Ruin. It is all Obama. He's publisher of The Hayride, which is a cultural and political site covering the southern area of the country, national current events, and his work can be found. I know many of you are familiar with American Spectator, where he's been a regular columnist since 2012, and he's also the author of the Revivalist Manifesto. Appreciate you being with us this morning. I want to ask you, because I'm sure you've been very familiar with this, so many people trying to figure out who's running the administration. There's all sorts of speculation. There are unknowns. At one point, laughably, in retrospect, people were claiming Kamala was actually going to be doing that. But Obama is a name that always pops up. And my question is this idea of this being, as you referred to it, as Obama's third term, does that mean that we are experiencing the residual effects of his first two terms, or is it more hands-on? He's actually behind the scenes, on the phone, talking with people and directing things, or is it a combination of the two?
Well, I would say it's probably a combination. If you believe, as I think most Americans believe, that Joe Biden is not actually the power in the White House today, and you got a pretty good indication of that opinion being more than an opinion,
right,
about a year or so ago when Obama showed up at the White House and was treated as a conquering hero. I mean, the video was hilarious. I mean, Joe Biden's walking around, can't even get anybody to talk to him. And it was pretty clear who the boss was at that point. And, you know, you can take the roster of the Biden White House, and it's more so than really ever before. It's the Obama Alumni Society that, you know, are in charge, whether it's the, you know, Susan Rice's of the world or the Samantha Powers or the Jake Sullivan's. I mean, you know, it's all the same people. And then, of course, about a week ago, you had David Axelrod, who basically speaks for Obama in all things, kind of pop off and say, you know, Biden shouldn't run in 24 when there's no other candidate, right? And it's you're a little late in the game to start an actual primary process. And then, you know, everybody is in the Democrat on the Democrat side has essentially conceded that Biden is going to be their nominee. And then all of a sudden Axelrod pops off and says this. It's an indication that, you know, the power behind the throne is, you know, certainly I think it's Obama, but is still active. And so the book talks about you're going issue by issue, policy by policy, what's going on in the Biden administration now, most all of which is stuff that is not even in the political mainstream for them to do. Like, for example, DEI in the military. Mm-hmm. Those are all things that are really have metastasized from events that happened when Obama was president. So it is certainly the Obama machine took over the Democrat Party. That happened all the way back in late 2007, 2008. But that control is still, I think, complete at this point. And, you know, they're imposing their will on the American people. And you can see it in almost everything these guys do. There is a continuum between Team Obama and Team Biden, such that, and when you look at Joe Biden and his cognitive state at this point, you know, it's obvious mm-hmm. there's somebody who's the power behind the throne. And I would just, you know, kind of close this answer by saying Obama is the first American ex-president to choose to live in Washington, D.C. That has never happened before. I think he's very much the active ingredient within the ruling elite of this country right now.
Was this deliberate? Was the choice of Biden one with the plan that we know he's really not going to be in charge? This will be Obama's to continue, or Was it just he organically ended up with South Carolina getting into the presidency, getting the nomination, and then over time the vacuum that was created of leadership in the White House, in the Democrat Party, lent itself to an opening for Obama and Obama crew to come in and start calling the shots?
Well, I would give you some circumstantial evidence to answer that. You know, first of all, I think it was early 2017, Barack Obama goes on the Stephen Colbert show. And he gives this really flip answer to this question that Colbert posed that was clearly a planted question. But Colbert, you know, kind of put it up as a joke. Well, you know, would you like to be the power behind the throne? And Obama kind of, you know, said this, well, you know, maybe if you gave somebody an earpiece and I'm sitting in my basement in a T-shirt and shorts and I could tell them what to say. Right. And it was all kind of laughed off as a joke. And then you saw, you know, the Trump-Russia hoax, which was a, you know, sort of a deep state operation. And then that sort of metastasized into 51 intelligence community spooks coming out publicly and saying that the Hunter Biden laptop story was Russian disinformation, right? And, I mean, you know, Jake Sullivan was the guy who put that together. He ends up the national security advisor. Yeah. And Sullivan was certainly a Obama retread. There are pretty obvious things. And then simply the nature of the Democrat primaries in 2020, right? So you had Joe Biden and Kamala Harris. And if you remember, Kamala was the Obama machine's initial choice to take over. Like that, she was who they were pushing. Obama went out and raised her money to stake that campaign. And of course she crashed and burned because the people didn't want anything to do with her. And Biden early was getting, you know, third, fourth place in the Democrat primaries. And then all of a sudden it gets put together and he's the nominee and everybody else starts dropping out. And then he picks Kamala Harris as the number two. And so, like, you know, what do you take from that? Well, those were the two people most likely to be Obama puppets in the White House. And they ended up the presidential nominee and the vice presidential nominee, despite between them barely getting more than 20% of the Democrat vote. I would say circumstantially, that's pretty strong evidence that something was put in place to make this happen. And then, of course, when Obama shows up at the White House, it's like, okay. Right. Like, here's the boss. So, you know, these guys are not going to leave a lot of smoking guns around that Obama is the power behind the throne. But it's pretty clear that he's got more influence as an ex-president than anybody else in American history.
We're talking with Scott McKay, our author of the week, sponsored by ABC Books on North Glenstone. The book is Racism, Revenge, and Ruin. It's all Obama. There's quite a contradiction in what we're told Obama is and was as president and even as a candidate versus the reality of what we got or the results. He was presented as this individual, it's going to be this wonderful unifier, bringing everyone together and reach across party lines. Yet if you look at that period of time, I think we saw the beginning of this massive acceleration of a lack of civility, of conflict, of these divisions that just got deeper and wider. And while as a country with people who have the right to speak their minds and vote and support the people that they want in there, you're always going to have those divisions. But it just seemed to get very mean and very nasty. How did that occur under a president that was presented as being the great peacemaker and healer of wounds?
Yeah, what I would say is, you know, we've been subjected to the greatest bait and switch in the history of American politics with this guy, because you're exactly right. The value proposition of Barack Obama as, you know, the presidential candidate in 2008 was that we were finally going to put all this race stuff behind us. And if you'll remember back in, say, 2007, we were at the zenith of race relations in this country. I mean, people were actively looking for ways to bring the races together. And he just totally took advantage of that. And I mean, no sooner did this guy get elected than you had the new Black Panther case. And then you had the, you know, the Skip Gates controversy that led to the Beer Summit. And then you had, you know, Trayvon Martin, Eric Garner, Alton Sterling, you know, the whole bit. And every time Obama could, he was stoking those racial fires. Remember when he said, you know, if I had a son, he'd look like Trayvon?
Right.
And I mean, you know, before Obama and Eric Holder got involved in that case, it was a nothing. Everybody in Sanford, Florida looked at this case and said, well, you know, it's unfortunate, but the kid was beating this guy to death on the pavement. I mean, it's foreseeable if you do that to somebody and he has a gun, he might use it. Like, nobody thought it was an issue until they, you know, they cranked up the race hustling engine and turned this thing into a massive deal. And of course, that's how Black Lives Matter got started. And that was one of the most successful grifts in the history of America. And, you know, they turned corporate America woke in the process that Obama began. And then, you know, with the George Floyd riots, I mean, you saw something that was, you know, hadn't been seen since 1968. And this was all stuff that Obama and his machine were hard at work stoking. And if you'll remember, Kamala Harris goes on, I guess it was Colbert, talking about the George Floyd riots and said, you know, they're not going to stop and they shouldn't stop. And, you know, her campaign was paying bail for George Floyd rioters, one of whom ended up killing somebody. You know, I think it's of a piece. All of it is the same. And, you know, this is the active ingredient in the Democratic Party. And, you know, it's continued division along racial lines. It's the war on cops. It's the war on faith. You know, things that most Americans would not vote for, you know, are being imposed on us by a group of people led by Obama who are really not even interested in persuading you.
Right.
They're interested in getting your compliance, which we see over and over again.
Well, and to that same point, the persuasion, many of us have noticed that the days of Democrats, at least, campaigning on their successes, even if they had to twist them or claim credit for someone else's successes, they provided evidence. Hey, here is what we have done. This is why you should elect us again. And now it's all just about how awful the other half of America is. And
right.
If you do not, you know, hand us an election victory, then all these awful, horrible things are going to happen. And it's just, it is the pitting of Americans against other Americans. And that's what their entire campaign platform is on. And so given that they have managed to craft their support base as one that simply hates other Americans who disagree with them, how do we get off that track? What is it that can be done in order to counter this damage?
Well, it's, you know, you need a Republican Party that is calibrated to fight the Obama machine. And there are, you're beginning to get that, particularly at sort of the lower level. I mean, you guys in Missouri, you know, with Josh Hawley and Eric Schmidt have, I mean, y'all have elected a couple of senators who understand this, get it, and act accordingly. You know, but the older line GOP is still sort of calibrated to run elections against Jimmy Carter and Michael Dukakis. And so that's one thing. But, you know, the big thing, as you were discussing how the typical Democrat campaign runs these days, what you'll notice is that it's a very emotional appeal. And it is calibrated to reach primarily unmarried women. So in the 2022 elections, there were four numbers just totally stood out, which is married men were R plus 20, Married women were R plus 14. Unmarried men were R plus 7. And unmarried women are D plus 37. And so their messaging is really calibrated to monopolize the unmarried female vote. And if you go back to 2012, the Obama reelection campaign, the most prominent piece of messaging that everybody remembers from then was the life of Julia, right? And this was sort of this series of infographics about all of the government handouts and government programs that Julia, who never once had a man in her life, this narrative identified, even though she had kids, she never had a husband or any of that kind of stuff. And this was all about how, you know, what the government can do for single women. And that has metastasized, because it is, you know, the Democrats are solely focused on abortion now, and all of these other issues that are all about, you know, whether it's single moms or even childless women, you know, what the Democrat Party and what the government can do for them. And then, of course, you see this messaging in the culture. I mean, ad nauseum. It's like, you know, we as Americans are now, you know, hell bent on destroying every marriage that we can through the culture. And I don't think any of this is an accident. I think this is something that that they have done a very, very good job of trying to isolate what they think is, whether it's a small majority or you know, a big majority, isolate a majority of people who have grievances against America as founded, and then kind of radicalize them and so energize them that they can just win turnout elections.
Right.
And, you know, they're not trying to persuade the center. They're trying to outvote the center. And, you see this in all of the cities, particularly the Democrats control. And you're starting to see it in some of these, you know, kind of college-educated suburbs and university towns and so forth, where it's the same politics. And it's all bent on, you know, grievance against traditional America.
Well, without question, certainly insightful. The book, again, Racism, Revenge, and Ruin. It's all about Obama, our author of the week, Scott McKay. Again, thank you so much for being with us. Our author of the week, sponsored by ABC Books on North Glenstone. I'm Nick Reed, Springfield's Talk 104.1.